Eric, I'll throw the broad general question at you. First thoughts on this extension, your reaction when you heard the news come down?
Yeah, you know, I think the reaction is probably going to be the same for all of us, I would imagine, and it's certainly been the case, I think, with instant reaction from folks on Twitter at this point. I think it's good for the Raptors and good for Lowry in terms of essentially rewarding a guy who I believe is probably number one on the list of all-time Raptors, and you heard Masai talk in that clip that you guys played about the legacy. Mm-hmm. This rewards him for that legacy and for the championship season last year, but then it also gives the Raptors the flexibility going into the most important summer coming, I guess, in 2 years from now, in the 21-22, when the Raptors and a bunch of the teams in the league are going to be lining up for the bonanza that will come with a bunch of players that will be available, most notably a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo and the free agent sweepstakes that will be going on that summer. So I think it gives the Raptors stability short-term while still keeping them flexible in the long term as they try to adjust their roster into sort of the next phase beyond where it is right now.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, E. I think that this contract does two things. First of all, it rewards Kyle for what he's done for this franchise. Additionally, it doesn't tie the Raptors to him at a number and a term that is going to handcuff them. But on the flip side of this, what it also does, and I don't think that this is their intention at all, but what it also does is allow for, if there's trade talks or if there's interest in adding a veteran point guard like Kyle Lowry at the trade deadline, if the Raptors don't perform to the point that we think they're going to, it allows for him to not just be a half a season rental if he does get moved. And again, I want to reiterate, I don't think that's their intention, but that's flexibility as well for the team.
Yeah, it's certainly true. Actually, they do have that flexibility, whether it be, you know, this year or next. And I think the point that you make about it maybe not being a rental, if they were even, as you say, underscoring, if they were even, you know, even thinking down that road, I think that it actually could be something that could be an asset next year. Let's just kind of fast forward a year from now. Who knows what happens to the Raptors this regular season, this postseason coming up, but going into that extension year next year, that potentially becomes a very valuable chip for obviously the Raptors themselves as an expiring deal of $30+ million coming off the books at the end of next season, where again, I say you're going into a very important summer across the league free agent wise. But if things aren't going as planned next season, then it's certainly a piece that could be dangled to a lot of teams where, as you just said, even if clubs don't necessarily want to do the rental, it might be a rental situation where you're only committing, 15 or 20 of that $30 million because you're picking Lowry up midway through the season, and the Raptors suddenly could use that as a potential trade chip as well to try and get something back in return. So I think there's value on all sides, and I think this is, at the risk of sounding cheesy or cliche, but I just think it's sort of a feel-good deal in the sense that it makes financial sense, I think, for the organization. It makes sense from the legacy standpoint in rewarding the player. It makes sense for Lowry, certainly at his age, to be able to ink a deal for $30+ million on extension to still be sitting here at his age saying, I've got 2 years and $64 million still ahead of me. I think that there's only positives on all sides at this point. And I think, even in the short term for this year, I don't know if we were going to go down this path, but I've kind of stood by the fact that I think, some of our friends to the south of the border, maybe, in my opinion, have sort of been unfairly writing the Raptors off in terms of their lot, their place in the Eastern Conference this year. And I think it kind of emphasizes Toronto's commitment to continuing to try and win this year. And I think outside of maybe Milwaukee still being the number one team in the East, I think that there's every reason to think that Toronto could or should be right in the mix for that number two, number three spot, fighting it out with the likes of Boston and Philadelphia and Brooklyn and some of the other, kind of better teams in the East. I don't think this is a fringe playoff team by any means. I think it's a veteran squad that's solidified by Lowry, obviously, by the emerging star in Siakam, by having a full season of Gasol, by having Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet, Norm Powell, OG Anunoby, a core of guys that have played together, many of them for multiple years now. And I think that this kind of emphasizes that point that you've got your best player back, at least for now, you hope, 2 seasons, happy with the contract, And ready to go, you know, come regular season in just 2 weeks from now.
With Eric Smith in Tokyo, he's with the Raptors. Kyle Lowry, a one-year, $31 million contract extension to take him through to the end of next year. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN breaking the news before 7 o'clock Eastern time this morning. Fred VanVleet's story is a great one, Eric, and we don't need to rehash it here because it's been told many times. He had a fantastic year a couple of years ago. He had an up and down regular season last year, to be fair, but he found his game at a crucial time in the playoffs. How does he, now that Lowry's got another year, and let's just work off the hypothetical and the presumption that Kyle will be here for the full 2 years, how does this affect at all Fred VanVleet, and what do we think the Raptors believe they have in FVV now that we see Kyle sign, you know, the one-year extension?
Scott, it was just about a week ago that, and Fred to me has been always one of those, you know, straight shooters. You kind of believe what he says. You don't really think that he's, you know, speaking in code or you know, not being straight with you. He said that there's no denying, and I'm paraphrasing here, but there's no denying he'd love to be a starter in his career, and you know, that's the goal, that's the bar that he has set for himself. But at the same time, he said, I'll still be absolutely satisfied with my career if I end up being a sixth man for my entire career. So, you know, it's certainly a goal that he has set to be a starter. I think that long-term plans for the Raptors, if it continues on this path, he is a guy that I think takes the reins for Toronto in the post-Lowry era. But that's just kind of been delayed, I suppose, by another year. The key might be, though, of course, is Fred VanVleet's a free agent at the end of this season as well, with the expiring contract of Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol to take into consideration, potentially as well. So I think it's one of those things where we might see the Raptors, if they can work it out with VanVleet and his camp, perhaps it's a shorter term deal for him as a free agent so that he can cash in on a bigger deal when there is more money available in a couple of years, when Lowry potentially is off the books, again, assuming he's not back beyond that point, and when the picture becomes a little clearer where the Raptors stand in 2 years, also with the Pascal Siakam contract extension that will eventually be coming, and whatever the Raptors may or may not be able to do in that free agent sweepstakes coming in a couple of seasons. So I think he's certainly in the plans. By no means is this a knock on VanVleet or an indication that the Raptors don't see him as a fit. I think it's merely just a case of taking care of Lowry, but they'll make sure that they're lining up their ducks to take care of Fred VanVleet as well. He's a guy that I think that the team, the organization, the management team certainly cherishes, but I think the coaching staff and the direction and the style of play that this team wants to play under Nick Nurse certainly cherishes a guy like Fred VanVleet as well.
By adding this year to Lowry's contract, does it help them in the future get free agents by, you know, taking care of your guys that have been in the organization?
I think it's a great point, Mike. I think that it certainly sends a message, and you could probably speak to it more than any of the three of us in terms of how much agents can run sports sometimes. And if you've got, I think, a happy client, you also want to be concerned about having a happy agent and making sure that agents know that you are a destination for a number of reasons, not just because you are a winning team, not just because you're a first-class organization, but because you're also a loyal team, a loyal organization that takes care of their own, takes care of clients, takes care of players, will do whatever it takes for them on and off the floor. And I think that this sort of sets the tone, especially with one of the bigger agents in the NBA right now, Mark Bartelstein. So when you're negotiating with Masai Ujiri, with Bobby Webster on another potential client that maybe is thinking of coming to Toronto, I think this can only help, absolutely. You don't want to be known as that general manager, that president, that team, that organization that is, you know, hardballing guys or lowballing guys or whatnot. Certainly the Raptors have been very kind to Kyle with the money that they've given him to this point. I don't think there's a lot of teams that would be lining up to pay Lowry right now, $30+ million. So this certainly is a sign for the Raptors. Again, just kind of going back to that legacy word that Masai himself brought up in the first 10 minutes of Media Day about a week and a half ago, that because of what he's done, he has earned the right to have this extension or to have this offer put in front of him. And I think that will certainly bode well with other agents and other potential players that could be future Raptors around the league.
All right, E, over to some heavy lifting here, because it's not something that we had anticipated talking about. And it really does highlight how big basketball is in China. So for those who don't know, there are tensions brewing between Hong Kong and Beijing. It's been like that for quite a few months, a lot of political unrest. So Daryl Morey, the GM of the Houston Rockets, who are in Tokyo to play the Toronto Raptors in a two-game series, he tweets out over the weekend, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." And I don't think he understood the ramifications of this, because the Chinese government came out and basically said, release a statement, renege those comments. What it's done so far is there's been many partners with the Houston Rockets who have backed out of deals. There have been streaming services and TV stations that say, we will not play your games anymore. And the Chinese Basketball Association said it would suspend all cooperation with the Texas-based team. And the association's chairman just happens to be Yao Ming. So you're there, you're in the mix, you're watching this firestorm play out right in front of your eyes. What do we need to know, and what is something that needs to be considered as this whole thing unfolds?
You know, it's certainly a loaded question and a loaded ordeal, to say the least, Ashley. And I mean, I wish I had more for you other than my opinion. I was at Rockets practice I'm telling you, this 13-hour time difference is screwing me up in terms of when what time it is here versus what day it is there and everything else. So I'll just say earlier today, because it's still Sunday. It is Sunday, right? It's Sunday night for me. So earlier on Sunday, I was at Rockets practice, and none of the players addressed it. James Harden said that he's, you know, leaving it alone. He has no comment on the matter. Mike D'Antoni, same thing, head coach of the Rockets. None of the players or coaches were saying anything. And I did ask some of the NBA reps that were in attendance if Morey not only was with the team, and they confirmed that, yes, he was. He was at practice on Saturday. I did not see him in the gym on Sunday, so he did not make any, you know, comment or public statement other than what he tweeted out in terms of his apology. And I'm paraphrasing here. I'm sure you guys can pull up the tweet or multiple tweets themselves, but where he essentially apologized and said, I didn't perhaps consider the issue enough from all sides. And now that I'm more informed, I apologize if I offended anyone, et cetera. Listen, I will simply say, just from a, I don't know if you guys agree, maybe I'm putting my own foot in my mouth, and with due respect to any of our Chinese or Asian listeners right now, I don't have all the facts. I certainly have not been as well read on the topic as many people maybe would be. But I think that the issue that probably was at the core of the tweet that Morey sent out, and I think that maybe many of us, at least in North America, have, is you're essentially standing up for human rights. And I would think a lot of people in Canada and in the United States would say that's not a bad thing. But then when you try to consider the history between Hong Kong, between Beijing, the history that's involved here, perhaps it's not as cut and dry, as black and white as the issue may ultimately appear to be to the naked eye. So I think it's one of those things where with so many complex layers to consider, it was probably best for Morey to say nothing. And it's certainly something now, financially speaking, for all those reasons you bring up, Ashley, it has, you know, sent off quite the domino effect of advertisers and money. You talk about the streaming service. From one of the articles I read, I don't know if you saw this as well, but one of the streaming services was talking about over 22 million people tuning into Rockets games in China. I mean, we're talking numbers that you know, people would be falling over themselves to be getting for hockey in Canada, let alone for basketball or football or baseball in any market, in any sport, in any country. 22 million people just watching the Rockets alone in a playoff run a year or two ago. So it has massive, massive implications. And of course, on top of all that, even though the Rockets are currently in Japan getting set to face the Raptors, you've got the NBA right now in China getting set for the China games as well, with Brooklyn and the Lakers, and the longstanding relationship that the NBA has had in playing exhibition games and doing NBA tours and whatnot in China and throughout Asia. So the trickle effect is certainly massive. And now comments have come down from the new owner, the Chinese owner of the Brooklyn Nets as well, and how he said he's going to continue to be outspoken as a board of governor, and he's going to stand up for the rights of the Chinese people, et cetera. So this is not going away. And I don't know if it's going to lead to the firing of Daryl Morey, even though, you know, reports are already indicating that likely won't be the case. But this is not going away, and it's going to take, I think, a long time to sort of mend fences.
No, that's you well put, E. And, you know, Scott, it's the conversation here at home now is how can an organization like the NBA, who thinks of themselves as so progressive and so quote unquote woke, now they're backtracking comments that indicate free speech and democracy. And that's kind of getting swirled up to this too. So we're not done with this.
Oh no. And it's, but Eric, to back to your point, it's business, right? I mean, why is the WWE doing massive shows in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia? Why was there such an issue over Colin Kaepernick kneeling? Well, the National Football League has a deal with the United States Army that effectively turns the month of November into a promotional vehicle for recruitment. This is the same thing here. The NBA is trying to expand its already deep tentacles in China, and all you got to do in these situations is follow the money.
Absolutely. And it's perhaps sad that that's the case, but that's the reality that that's the case. And when you start talking about, you know, as I say again, the streaming service that has now been dropped. And I think I read one of the articles saying now that they're offering sort of a rebate or an opportunity to Chinese fans that signed up for the service. If they want to pick one other favorite team, they can sign up and have exclusive rights to that team, but they're dropping all Rockets games. The relationship that obviously the Rockets have had and maintained over the years with, you know, one of their former stars and all-time greats in Yao Ming, that's a relationship all but, you know, severed as well. Tencent, who's a broadcast a giant in Asia and China, who's, you know, has almost as many rights to the NBA All-Star Game and to the NBA Finals as you know, ABC, ESPN, and the North American giants here on this side of the globe. They're now, you know, dropping out of a lot of the broadcasting agreements from what I've read in the last, you know, 24, 36 hours as well. That could have massive implications. So financially speaking, again, as you say, Scotty, it's not just hitting the Houston Rockets. It's hitting the NBA. So that's why I continue to say this thing will not be going away. This is not going to be swept under the rug in short time. It's going to be something that I'm sure is going to drag on for a couple of weeks, if not a couple of months. And it's going to take potentially a couple of years to truly maybe, as I say, mend that fence that has been broken at this point. But as I said off the top, too, it's such a complex issue beyond just basketball, beyond the money, because it does come down to human rights as well. And that's probably something for another day, not for sportscasters to be talking about on a Monday morning. It's probably for smarter people than us to be, you know, figuring out what exactly is happening. Because I know, you know, it even plays back to the World Championships, the World Cup, you know, being held in China, and the security concerns that were there for basketball, let alone going forward for you know, whether it be for news agencies, for press, for you know, business folks, for diplomats that are going overseas. There's a lot of you know, difficult things, complex things going on in China right now that you know, extend even just beyond the sports world, obviously.
Great stuff, Eric. I mean, we brought you on originally for the big news, the breaking news of the last hour and a half, which is that Kyle Lowry has signed a one-year, $31 million contract extension with the Raptors. So good mood in Toronto and certainly over in Tokyo as it pertains to the Raptors today. Thanks for your time, pal. And I guess it's like almost 9:30 at night there. So go get a late dinner or find a club and party.
Yeah, well, probably all of the above. And I might be jumping the gun a little bit on this here because I don't know if I don't know if this will still be the case now that this deal has been done, but I was told when I left practice on Sunday that at shoot around on Tuesday morning, I'd be getting Kyle Lowry one-on-one for an interview that we were hoping to air on Sportsnet at some point this week. So hopefully that's still the case, and maybe we'll, you know, hear it straight from the man's mouth in, you know, 12 hours or so if I do ultimately get the chance to chat with him.